right, Friday morning, everybody. It is the Fan Morning Show for Friday, and I'm Roger Lajoie, along with George Russick. We are here for the next 4 hours, and great to be with you. Much to discuss. We'll discuss it all. You can always reach the show by text 590-590. Name and location, please. If you are texting, you can hit George and I up on Twitter as well, at the Fan 590. And always great to be with you. Good morning, Mr. Russick. It's a little early in the morning for you and I, pal.
Yeah. When that alarm goes off that early, you're like, hey now, let's do some radio. But as you're aware, I once upon a time felt like 1,000 years ago did host the morning show here for like almost 3 years.
So. You know these hours much better than me, George. This time of morning, getting up, getting the percolator going. There's no question about it. But it's great to be here in the morning to connect with everybody. And a great Friday morning indeed. Obviously, we send our deepest condolences, as is the world this morning, at the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, Canada's head of state, and the longest reigning British monarch, of course, passing away yesterday afternoon, as you're all aware, in Scotland at the age of 96, a long, dignified, wonderful, and historic life. So obviously, deepest condolences to everyone. Remember, and George, any reign of 70 years is incredible. And I think it's wonderful, too, the way the sports world paid tribute to her, which is great. It's always difficult, you know, George, when news like that breaks and we're a sports station and you know what do you even say? Well, you offer condolences, you mention it. It's not for us to talk at length, and we're not going to talk at length about Queen Elizabeth, but the way the sports world acknowledged it at National Football League game last night, sports obviously in the United Kingdom very different than in North America in terms of how they perceive it and handle it, but I thought it was done in a dignified manner, and it seems, you know, well, it's a small thing. It's not a small thing. It means a lot to a lot of people. So God bless the Queen, rest her soul, and I think the sports world acted appropriately yesterday, as we all will in a time of mourning for the wonderful people of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I absolutely echo everything you just said, Roger. I heard something yesterday, too. She's literally, or was, one of the most famous people in the world, if not on that list of, what, top three famous people on the planet? Like, you just think of who doesn't know who Queen Elizabeth was, right? Like, I think the only person, I don't know, maybe as famous is, unfortunately, the Orange Man, Donald Trump. Like, everyone knew who Donald Trump was, especially when he was a president of the United States. Like, but Queen Elizabeth, literally one of the most famous people on the planet. And the work she did and how she represented herself and being under that microscope her entire life, Roger, and how she carried herself with the utmost class is just a testament to what kind of person she is or was.
Very well said. And it's the dignity, you know, of the woman. And say what you want. I know, listen, we get into the political aspects of it. Everyone, you know, has different views on that. But the class, the dignity that the woman carried herself with for so long, a part of people's lives for 70 years. As, you know, reading yesterday, you know, she had 15 British prime ministers serve under her. And she met Joe Biden, met Biden several times, but met him last in 2021 when he was, I guess, a year into his presidency. And she met 13 U.S. presidents. You span a lifetime. So part of that fame just comes obviously from longevity, George, and time on the planet and the people you interact with. And yes, of course, you know, the president of the United States, the Dalai Lama, other big world political figures are going to be the most famous people because of the exposure they get in the world. And of course, they're newsmakers all the time. But in terms of, you know, if you just showed people throughout this planet the picture of people, you're totally right. Queen Elizabeth is right at the top of people anywhere on this, in God's earth, that would recognize, oh, yeah, that's the Queen of England. And yes, so, and that's a loss. And I can imagine what it's like, you know, for the people of the United Kingdom who, you know, are ruled by the royal family, and the Queen is there for 70 years. And then she passes. It's incredible. And even when you think about it, George, is like, so King Charles III, who immediately ascends to the throne, that gentleman is 73 years old.
Incredible.
He'd been waiting a long time to get that promotion, and I don't mean that trite. But you know what I'm saying is, like, yes, at 73, the son takes over. So bless her, and thoughts with the people of the United Kingdom this morning. And you are so right. She is a world icon and one of the most known people on the planet, and great the way the sports world recognized her yesterday, including the NFL, where it started its season. And George, got to tell you, I was thinking on the way in, I watched a game last night, and I got to get up these, you know, early morning hours. So I went right to bed, but I'm thinking, okay, could that have been any better for the Bills? Well, yeah, sure, they could have won 50-0, I guess. But in terms of the way they won, the performance of Allen, coming from a tie at the half, dominating the second half, putting your stamp on the game. You know, George, I think Bills Mafia's just got to be totally delighted with the events last night.
Ooh. And Roger, let's not forget here, four turnovers for the Buffalo Bills last night. Two fumbles, two interceptions. I saw the stat last night. The Bills became the second team since 2014 to have at least four turnovers but still win a game by 21 points.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? That is pretty amazing when you think, because one of the stats, and you know, George, you're the big guy in the NFL for sure. One of the biggest stats is the team that turns the ball over the most or has problems with turnovers, a negative turnover rate is disaster for most NFL teams. It's just a stat. It's like,
I love that. The team that wins the turnover differential is probably going to do well. No kidding.
Thank you. Thank you. That's really my insight for today's NFL thing. Yeah. And they still overcome that. And Allen, the dual threat. Five incomplete passes all game, throws for three, runs for one, does Josh Allen things. So all the hype, everything we were told about this team, certainly in game one, they passed with flying colors, George. I think that's the only thing this year when we watch the Bills in particular, because of the hype, because of where they are and the expectations, I don't think there's any doubt now. They're just, people are going to be looking for them to beat themselves. It's legit. It's real. It's a team that can win a Super Bowl. It can win 13, 14 regular season games. There isn't much doubt about that. Now they have to just live up to the expectations. And I think, you know, if they do lose more than a couple of games, it's going to be because they beat themselves or injuries or something else. Because it's hard to see the Buffalo Bills losing a lot of football games this year, George. And what exciting times for all the fans in Buffalo, man.
Real quick, too, Bills handing the Rams their first 20-point-plus loss since 2019, and there goes Sean McVay's perfect streak in week one. I was thinking about a lot of stuff during the game last night, Roger, and watching Josh Allen play, two things came to mind. Number one, especially when they were up big, good Lord, is that guy taking way too many bigger hits at the end of the game, but he also had that absolutely nasty stiff arm, trucked a linebacker at the beginning of the game. He's a large human being, but the one thing that it, and I knew this before and again, because you don't watch football, the first meaningful game since February, is there an athlete in any, at the big four major North American sports, Roger, that fits his city more than Josh Allen in Buffalo?
That's a tough one to...
There's no way we can quantify it,
right?
But people in Buffalo love him so much, Roger. He throws the ball. He's got a laser rocket arm, does whatever it takes to win games, takes big hits. His teammates love him. They call him the general. Stephon Diggs to the NFL Network after. He's our general. He's our leader. That's my guy. Like, I just, he fits like a glove in the freezing city of Buffalo. Like, the love affair with Josh Allen must be just, it just continues to grow every day. Like, he fits like a glove to what the city Buffalo is. He's a superstar player with a blue-collar attitude, Roger.
I totally agree with that, especially you add the dimension. You know, he can run. He's not like your prototypical go-back-and-pass quarterback in a mobile, and he's not just a complete running machine. He does everything. His play on the field is the ultimate thing. I mean, the city, George, has been starved for this kind of star and this kind of team for a long time, with all due respect to Jim Kelly and the four Super Bowl teams. I mean, the Bills have had some great teams, but it's been a long time, and there have been a lot of quarterbacks who have been bust. There are a lot of head coaches that have been a bust in Buffalo, and there's been a lot of pain in the franchise for the better part of a couple of decades. We don't have to run down the history books. And for a guy like that to come in and do that, there's no question. It's his ability on the field more than anything else, but I'm with you too. And he's not the brash kind of guy. He's not a New York City kind of quarterback. I see that too in terms of the way he conducts himself. He is the perfect quarterback at the perfect time for that franchise right now. And boy, it's one game in. You don't want to start, you know, just getting ridiculous about this early in the season. But I go back again. Yes, it could have been 50-0, but that was just about picture perfect for them, especially George taking over in the second half, right? Because we talked about this. You and I were together doing a show yesterday, and we talked about this. Some people get a little bit.
We did a show yesterday, Roger.
Some teams.
It was Brent Gunning you did a show with yesterday. Sorry.
Yes, it was. Yes, I meant the day before yesterday. We've been a lot together a lot there, George. So when we last did, we were talking about this team, and here's with the Bills in particular, and Josh Allen is like so. You have the opening ceremony. You raise the banner. Sometimes that works against the home team. It does. Everyone thinks, I don't want to go in there, and they get pumped up. You talk to players in sports, George, and the coaches will tell you, you know what, I'd rather be the visiting team for that. It's a bit of a pain. They're distracted. We get to the game. First half is tied, so that's a wash now. That's out of the way. You make your adjustments at halftime, and the Bills run the show in the second half. That's really encouraging. That's the defending Super Bowl champs that had time to get over that ceremony. All right, the first half, they're feeling out, tie game, here we go. And they totally run them off the field in the second half in their home building on their banner lifting night. That is impressive with a capital I, George.
Yeah, to me, I know you mentioned Josh Allen, and obviously we talk about quarterbacks way more than we maybe should in the ultimate team sport that is football. But that defense last night, Roger, was absolutely ferocious. The defensive line of the Buffalo Bills was the star of the show. Matthew Stafford, and it's kind of like too much inside baseball, but it's fine. The Bills played shell coverage, only brought four, and they were getting to Matthew Stafford. 7 sacks, 15 quarterback hits, Roger, and 3 interceptions. And look no further than their prized free agent, the guy who said he wanted to go to a football town with a rabid fan base. Von Miller was worth every bit of that $100 million contract last night. 2 sacks, 3 tackles for loss. And the one thing that really struck me about Von Miller was when he was playing with the Rams and even with the Broncos, you'd see flashes of old Von Miller, but he didn't look as explosive as he did in that year he won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. He looked explosive last night, Roger. Like, he was a menace last night. He was a game wrecker last night for the Buffalo Bills. And if you want to draw up a perfect script, and you and I have talked about this with numerous football guests, the way to win in today's NFL is have an explosive passing game, which the Buffalo Bills do have in spades, check, and the ability to get to the quarterback because they make you throw the ball to get back into the game. That's how you win Super Bowls in the NFL. That's the recipe to beat Tom Brady. How did Tom Brady lose his Super Bowls? Too much pressure. And the Bills' ability to get to Matthew Stafford last night was the difference in the game.
Oh, there's no doubt. And if they can perform on the defensive side of the ball anywhere close on a consistent basis the way they did last night, this team is indeed a juggernaut. And you're absolutely right. You look at the Patriots, especially their losses to the Giants in the Super Bowl, and Brady is under siege, and that's exactly what they did. Back to Von Miller, George. You know, I know people in Buffalo were very excited, and rightfully so, that he's there. But he's there for the late stretch run, playoffs, that stabilizing presence. So, you know, his legacy is going to be written later in the season. He knows that. But to me, I'm watching last night. There's a guy who's revitalized. Not that he needs to be revitalized. But he's pumped. You talk about it, and the expectations, don't think, you know, here's a guy sitting at this stage of his career. You don't think he really sees the opportunity he's got here? Like, he's looking around him going, oh my goodness. This is a cap of my career. I'm going out here with as a champion. Not to say he's going to retire at the end of this year, but clearly his best days are behind him. But what an opportunity for him! And I think he's buying in. Now, the only thing is, it'll be interesting to see, George, how the season progresses for him, the entire 17-game season, how they use him, especially if this team is as good as we think it's going to be and kind of gets chilled out in the division. Because if they can handle the defending Super Bowl champs like that, George, how difficult is it going to be for them to win the AFC East this year?
Yeah, and I'm doing season debut of Inside the Lines on Sunday, Roger. Cam Stewart along for the ride this season. Very excited about that. Steve found himself another gig. We wish him the best. But there's one thing I do know about week one, Roger. Teams are never as good as they look and is never as bad as they look, because teams have all summer to prepare for their week one opponent. And I thought Ken Dorsey, the offensive coordinator for the Bills, I thought he called a good game last night. Looked very similar to what Brian Daboll was doing with the Bills. But when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen performing the way he was last night, throwing those absolute laser beams and using his big body to move those chains, yeah, juggernaut's the word. And I know that's kind of a buzzword when it comes to the Maple Leafs. It's kind of funny. But the Bills do look like an absolute juggernaut. And Stephon Diggs last night torching Jalen Ramsey, just lit him on fire last night. Jalen Ramsey, the best corner in all the NFL, had no answer for Stephon Diggs, who had a massive, massive game last night. The only thing is, poor James Cook fumbles really early on. As a rookie, you can't do that. Maybe we'll see in week four, James Cook. Maybe you'll get a little bit more of the ball, because that's the dem to breaks in the National Football League when you fumble as a rookie so early in your career. I think it was his first carry he fumbled. That's a tough look. Zach Moss fumbled the football as well. It's the only negative, a little more ball security in the run game. Devin Singletary seems like he's going to be the number one option there for a while when all this hype around James Cook. But again, Roger, it's week one. And it's funny how we have these perceptions, we view these teams in a certain light after their week one performance, and sometimes that lasts through the entire season. Like, just everybody should dial it back. What we watch on Sunday is generally not what these teams are going to be all about. But Buffalo lived up to that preseason hype last night, doing what they did to the Rams. I wanted to ask you one more thing about the Rams. Lots was made. It was kind of starting to creep up towards the kickoff of this game and the lead up to the game the last few days. Matthew Stafford's throwing elbow. It was a problem last night, Roger. He missed some throws he shouldn't have. His ball didn't, to me, didn't look like it had the zip that it did last year with the Rams. The problem in the NFL is generally you don't get better as the season wears along because of what a grind it is and how physical the game of football is. If you're a Rams fan this morning, should you be concerned about that elbow with Matthew Stafford?
Well, probably. You got to be concerned, period, when you lose your home opener by 21 points. And I hear everything you say in terms of, you know, it's week one, and I get that. In fact, that's true of the NFL, George, though, all 17 weeks of the regular season. Nobody is ever as good as they look or as bad as they look. And maybe you don't even really get a feel for how teams are deeper in the season. But yes, if you start the season with concerns on the arm front, that is, I said earlier, could the game have gone any better for the Bills outside of winning 50-0? I'll reverse that then. Could it have gone any worse for the Rams?
Yeah.
No. Unless they lost 50-0. Because seriously, George, I thought by halftime, because in the first half, I'm thinking, okay, you know what, that was the, if this is a boxing match, these guys are just trading blows here for a little while, and it's tied the half, and the scorecards are even, and now the fight's really going to get interesting, because one guy's going to go for the knockout or whatever. And the Rams had no answers in the second half. They had no answers for the Bills in the second half. And okay, it's week one, gotcha. And let's not get over, but the difference in this one compared to the games coming up on Sunday is the Bills are the Super Bowl favorites, and the Super Bowl favorites acted like the Super Bowl favorites.
Yeah.
They looked like it. They acted the part perfectly. And I look at it from their fan standpoint, and I know Bills Mafia has got to be absolutely delighted the way things went in game one. And, you know, you see people in Buffalo celebrating online or whatever, and then you get the fallback. It's one game. That's the beauty of the NFL, George. It may only be one game, but every game is important. And especially, you know, one of the things I enjoy so much is the dichotomy between the baseball season and the NFL season. And here we are now. How does it make us sound, those of us that were worked up about individual baseball games back in April and May? I mean, it's a long season. It all comes down to this. The NFL, nobody wins a Super Bowl in week one, but you can be out of the playoffs by week five or six.
Oh, yeah.
It's like pretty simple.
But Roger, that also makes the NFL so great that it's only once a week. And you only have to put in that time for watching one game a week if you're a fan of a team. And you're right, every game is so vital when it comes to playoff positioning. Sure, adding that extra team in every conference makes races a lot more interesting and adds a lot more teams into the mix. But yeah, every game is so crucial and important. There's just so many things I want to get to about this game last night, too. You know well as I do, you're a fantasy football player. I know you enjoy it. I don't think you're as hardcore as maybe some other people are out there, Roger.
Like you? Yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm kind of hardcore when it comes to fantasy. I'm hardcore when it comes to everything football last night. I loved, by the way, I love the over on the Gabe Davis yard prop. I thought that was easy at 61.5 yards. But whatever, cash to take it. Good for George. Nobody cares. What I wanted to talk about was those people who drafted Cam Akers as a running back high and Allen Robinson as a wide receiver. Cam Akers last night, Roger, three carries for no yards. And Allen Robinson, one catch for 12 yards on two targets.
Yeah, not good.
Woof.
Not good. Not good. One game into the season, but you talk about early indicators and panic mode in your fantasy leagues if you got those guys. Were you surprised how the game went in terms of the over-under and points and everything else about the game, George? I mean, what were you thinking at halftime?
Yeah, you know why I wasn't surprised, Roger? Because generally defense, it takes a while for the offense to catch up to defense early on in the season. And especially now with the amount of teams that don't play their stars in preseason, at least the Bills and Josh Allen had that little bit of action. The Rams didn't play any of their starters. Matthew Stafford did not see one snap. Cooper Kupp did not see one snap in the preseason. And maybe if you're Sean McVay and the rest of the NFL, you look at that performance last night, they looked a little out of sorts. They looked that the timing was off. You have a brand new shiny wide receiver in Allen Robinson, considered by many one of the better underrated receivers in all the National Football League. He was a non-factor last night. He was invisible. It's like, are you going to throw to him? The game plan pretty much was like quoting the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode from way back when, pass it to Will, and instead of pass it to Will, Roger, it was pass it to Cooper Kupp. 15 targets last night, 13 catches, 128 yards. They obviously need to spread the wealth around a little more, and that's why Odell Beckham Jr. last year added such an incredible ingredient to that team to make to give a little more space to Cooper Kupp. But it was a one-man show last night. This is our game plan. Just throw it to Cooper Kupp and hope he can score his touchdowns. And even that interception, a great one by Jordan Poyer that went through the hands of Cooper Kupp, that ball was behind him. And I don't know if that had anything to do with Matthew Stafford and his elbow, but if that ball is on the money, he probably gets the first down there and the entire game probably changes, or at least it's a lot closer than the 21-point blowout. But back to your original question, it takes a while for these offenses to catch up to defenses, and I think we saw that last night. And maybe, again, I know you always have to run the risk of injuries in preseason, but you also need those reps with live ammo to perform on the biggest stage, and the Bills just looked sharper last night.
It's a good point in terms of the preseason game, George. We've talked about this a lot. I can't stand exhibitions. I don't really see the point, but I would agree with you. The Bills looked more game ready for game one than the Rams among the other. But the biggest thing to me, and you keep coming back to it, was Stafford's arm conditioning of. And I don't know what the Rams are going to do if they can't up that offensive performance in coming weeks. It might be a long year for the defending champs. And again, it's one game into the season. They just beat the. Let's see how they bounce back. And football's all about adjustments, whether it's in game or in next games. It's a great coaching staff. We know what they've been able to do in the past. We'll see if they can get it straightened out. But a great win for the Bills in game one for sure. Roger Lajoie, George Russick with you. It's a Fan Morning Show. Delighted to be with you. You can reach the show by text anytime, 590, 590. Drop us a text, 590, 590. Hit us up on Twitter, at the Fan 590. Lots of guests coming up on the show, including Charles Davis, going to talk to us about the NFL. Gord Stellick is going to do some hockey talk with us as well. Buck Martinez on the show this morning. So much to discuss. And, of course, we're going to talk about the Blue Jays. And all of a sudden, George, maybe just a little bit of a pennant race going on in that American League East. 4.5 games. The Yankee lead is down two.
Where's my poll question about does the Blue Jays have a chance in the AL East?
You're going to revive that, George? Yeah, of course. What did we do? Didn't we do that about like 2 weeks ago when they got to within seven
that series
games
against the Yankees?
Here they come. The season hasn't started yet. Jay's talking more to come. It's a Fan Morning Show. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Roger Lajoie, George Russick with you this morning till 10 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's a Fan Morning Show. Roger Lajoie, George Russick with you here until 10 o'clock. JD and Ailish should be back next week. We're delighted to be with you. Lots to talk about. We'll talk a lot of Blue Jays. And you can talk to us. Text 590-590. Name and location if you're texting. On Twitter, at the Fan 590. George and I both on Twitter. Give us your comments on anything we're talking about. Love to hear back from you. Charles Davis on the NFL. Gord Stellick on the NHL. The great Buck Martinez on the Blue Jays. New commissioner of the NHL is going to join the show as well, and we've got plenty to come, so please do join us, and thanks for being with us. Drive safely if you're out there on those roads this morning. So, George, we had that poll up a couple of weeks ago when the Blue Jays and the Yankees were in that series, and oh, yeah, and the Jays were coming, and then it ended with a bit of a thud, and if memory serves, I believe the Jays went to 8 games back again, and we kind of forgot about it because, well, you know, it looks like Yankees maybe finally got their act together. The New York Yankees do not have their act together. They were 8-20 in August, the worst record in the American League. Now, think about that. This is the team with the second-best record overall in the American League to date, and they had the worst record in the American League in August. And we're in September, and even though they did sweep a doubleheader from the Twins the other day, they lost last night. Their lead against Tampa Bay is down to 4.5 games. Jays 6 back. And Tampa Bay in at Yankee Stadium this weekend. I can only imagine the citizens of Yankee Stadium, George, if the Yankees do not win that series and kind of put the division to bed, which they could do with a sweep this weekend. This team is reeling for months, George.
Yeah. This isn't like a small sample size, right? That, oh, no, it's just a blip in the radar. No, Roger, I don't know if it still holds true, but they have to be one of the worst, if not the worst team in the American League since Canada Day. Like, and that's a pretty big sample size here. We're into September now. Like, the team just continues to struggle. They look old. The bats have cooled off. Outside of Aaron Judge, who's having a phenomenal MVP-type season, the team's struggling big time. And, man, talk about a team that's ripe for the picking if you play them in the postseason, too, because they haven't won a World Series since 2009, Roger. Like, things are getting a little dicey in New York, and I'm sure Brian Cashman, the Yankees GM now, all of a sudden losing some sleep because there's whispers in New York that if this season goes awry and goes sideways and they don't at least go far in the playoffs, his job might be in jeopardy.
Well, the Jordan Montgomery deal is going to come back to bite him if this team doesn't do anything in the playoffs this year, or heaven forbid for their standpoint, although I don't care. I don't really care about the New York Yankees. I kind of think it'd be fun if they missed the playoffs.
It's fun to watch them crash and burn.
Absolutely. Yeah, someone's going to have to be accountable. George, not only have they not won the World Series, they haven't been in the World Series since 2009. And for a team with that payroll, and it's now, mind you, they're a consistent playoff team, okay? So before, you know, the Yankee fans say, here you go bashing the Yankees again, they're a consistent playoff team. They've been a very good team. They've got star players. They've had a ton of injuries this year. There's no doubt. Not making excuses for them, but those are the facts. They have had some. But I don't know. I can't say they've been the worst team in the American League since Canada Day, George, but pretty close. Pretty close. Because when you consider how they started this year, they're still, you know, 83-55. That's over 600 ball, just over 600 ball. 601 is their winning percentage. That's a very impressive season. But July, August, and now 9 days into September, they have been sub 500 with that lineup and that payroll. So, yeah, should the attention, the spotlight go into the front office? Absolutely. Both on the manager Boone and on Cashman. And I've always felt, George, I don't know, people around baseball think Cashman is a great general manager. And I guess. But again, when you've got that much money, that much financial power, and you have no World Series appearances in 13 years, it does make you wonder. What's been the missing ingredient? Why can't they get over the top? And yes, playoff appearances every year, but they don't hang banners at Yankee Stadium for playoff appearances. Yeah. The Yankee Stadium is like the Bell Center in Montreal. There's only one banner that hangs. You're not going to see the Montreal Canadiens hang up a division championship if they ever win a division championship. They just don't do that kind of thing. It's Stanley Cup or bust. Yankee Stadium, it's World Series, 27 of them there, or bust. So, yeah, it's going to – and I tell you, I'll be watching the Jays in Texas tonight because obviously it's the Jays, and we'll focus on them in a second. But, man, I'm gonna be flipping back. I'm going to see what that crowd's like at Yankee Stadium tonight, especially if the Rays get up 3 or 4 runs early in the ballgame.
Yeah. Yankees, I looked it up, Roger. Yankees 27-34 since July 1st, and since August 1st, 14-21.
Yay.
Woof.
And that 14-21 is a comeback because they won a couple of games in early September. So maybe the signs are there. I thought after they swept that doubleheader, and that doubleheader the other night, I thought, okay. And I said the same thing about the Jays, George, several times. I thought, okay, here they go. Now they're going to settle down. And they won that first one in 12 innings, if memory serves. Minnesota got a run in the top of the 12th. Yankees got two in the bottom. So, you know, nice comeback win. Then they thump them 7-1 in the second game of the doubleheader. And you're going, okay, well, here they are. No, and they turn back and they lose again to them. And 4.5 game lead. Anything can happen. Ton of time still. Division still very much in play. The Jays 6 back. That'll be a little bit tougher. But speaking of the Jays, have to like the hammer hold, George, they kind of have on a playoff spot now because – and after that series against Baltimore, and we've talked about the Orioles so much, you and I, and the shows we've done over the summer, and every time I bring them up, people remind me, you know, either by text or email or a Twitter message that, you know, you're harping the Orioles, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. They do deserve a lot of credit, George. But after the way the Jays handled them 3 out of 4 in Baltimore, I'll put it this way now. It's not as scary that the Jays still have a bunch of games left with the Orioles, I believe 6. The rest of the way. You know what? Bring them on right now. They look like a team that can be beat.
Just quickly back to your Yankees point, Roger, because I'm trying to think, Blue Jay fans hate who more, the Yankees or the Rays? Because I feel like maybe it's the Rays.
Well, it's probably the Rays only because they've been so bloody bad in Tampa for so many years.
Yeah.
And the Rays are that team that never spend any money, and they're always at right near the top of the division. And in the last 15 years, the Rays have probably won more games than the Blue Jays, and they've been in the playoffs one or two more times. And they went to a World Series. So, yeah, if you're going to be envious, the Yankees are just because everybody hates the Yankees. If you're not from New York, generally speaking, the Yankees are and the Red Sox are the evil giants of baseball. So when you're a Jays fan, you'll probably pick the Rays as hatred more than the Yankees because there's that recency bias as well of teams. George, the teams you really hate are the teams you meet in most sports in the postseason, or you've had intense battles with, or they've cleaned you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's that simple. You'll ask Bills fans, who do they hate the most? It's the Patriots. Why? Because the Patriots own them for 15 years. That's why. It's like embarrassing. But the one of the worst stats of eight, it's my favorite stat, and I forget, it was a couple of years ago, but whoever was the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, all right, the active quarterback with the most wins in Buffalo was Tom Brady. And yep. Tom Brady didn't even play for the Buffalo Bills. And he's only there once a year.
It's phenomenal.
Like come on.
Yeah, before Josh Allen started racking up this wins, the guy who in the last 25 years in Buffalo, the quarterback with the most wins in Buffalo was Tom Brady.
Right.
It was a phenomenal stat.
Right. So
like,
that's where so
mind blowing.
So get to, you know, to the point about the Jays and the hatred. It's probably the Rays, but then, you know, when the Red Sox were good, there was a pretty heated rivalry there, but it's those Rays. However, I think, and I don't know, I can't speak for Jays fans. Hey, you want to weigh in on this? Drop us a text, 590-590. Put your name and location. Who do you want to, if the Jays don't come back and win the division, which is what Jays fans obviously would be the dream for them, who are you cheering for? Rays or Yankees? Who are you cheering for tonight? The Rays or the Yankees? There's you talk about the division rivals. Which one? It's choosing evil, I suppose, if you don't like either one of them. But I'd be kind of curious as to where they're at. I'll still take the Rays over the Yankees just as much as I grudgingly, George, you just have to hand it to Tampa Bay. I mean, I don't know how they manage this. I guess they're so far ahead. They're one of the reasons that analytics dominate baseball as much as they do is because they have been so successful, and they were basically the inventors of it. Let's be real clear about that. They were ahead of the game. They were doing the shift. I remember years ago watching those first games, and Tampa Bay's got four outfielders going, what are they doing? No, everybody does that.
Yeah.
Everybody's just copied their act. So I just got to grudgingly tip the hat to them. But that is a big weekend series, because the division then, and that's the whole card. Let's say Tampa goes in there, wins three. They get to within a game and a half, and if the Jays get to within three, now all bets off. Now you're talking, all right, division's back in play here. Here we go. With still, there'd still be 22 games to play, and the Jays got the Yankees in a series coming up.
You're right. Like all of a sudden, and we've seen teams fold like cheap suits in September in baseball. It's happened numerous times. Look at the lead the Mets had on the Braves earlier this season, and that's gone. It's evaporated because Atlanta's been just phenomenal. Alex Anthopoulos doing an okay job with his world champion Atlanta Braves. I looked it up, Roger. I'm just a stats machine today for you. I am just like a stats slot machine paying out jackpot after jackpot. Do you know what the Blue Jays record is in Tampa over the last 15 years at the Trop?
All right, how many games have they played? Give me the game total.
Okay, this is fun.
All right.
135.
They played 135 regular season, not including that.
It just says in the last 15 years in Tampa.
Because they only played in the playoffs at one time, so that's fine. Okay.
How many wins do you think they have out of the 135 in the last 15 years?
48.
That's close. 45.
That's pretty close.
They're 45-90 in Tampa in the last 15 years.
I should get a prize for that. That's pretty close.
You should. You should go to the X. Too bad the X is done.
Yeah,
you
it's done. I'm going to win it. You're going to stuff that.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
Were you the one winning the jar of jelly beans, Roger, in the elementary school days when they had to guess the jelly beans in the jar?
Never won that one once, George. And I always was convinced I was going to win, too. I thought, I think I got this figured out. I never did. Wow, that's pretty bad. And that's where
45-90.
Yeah, 45 games under 500 over 15 years. So every year you can count on being three games under at least a year against Tampa Bay in Tampa. That affects your season record, like because division rival, right? You're playing them 19 times a year or 10 and 9, depending on how it goes. Some years you play them 10 in Tampa, and the other year it's 10 in Toronto. I tell you one thing, next year, it is going to be fascinating to see how a balanced schedule changes that American League East, because it's going to change the division. It really will. Now there's this no more, and that's where a young upcoming team like the Orioles, so instead of 19 with the Yankees, 19 with the Red Sox, 19 with the Jays, they're going to be playing, and everyone's the same, that's down to 13, and you'll be playing less games in the American League and then playing everybody in baseball. So it really changes the whole mix, and it really levels the playing field. It really does. It's that argument now of, well, they're in the American League Central, and now it'll still apply a little bit, you know, really, because the division, the group you're in still applies a bit. But the schedule is even more evened out, and it won't be one division is so hard done by with six less against the Yanks, six less against the Red Sox, Orioles, the way they were improving, a team they've got, and against the Rays. That really changes the potential of teams in the East to win even more games. And last year, four of them had 90-plus wins. What happens when they don't have to play each other? I don't know. I think you're going to see a very different baseball season next year as a result of that, George.
Yeah, I think, you're not going to have the teams cannibalize each other as much as they do. What do we keep talking about with the Seattle Mariners, that they get to play teams like the A's, the Rangers, and the Angels here down the stretch? Like, that's a lot easier for them. But that's not going to be the case next year. And you know what, Roger? It's nice to see the Blue Jays playing everybody, right? You one year you play, like, we'll see a series with the Padres. That's exciting. The Padres are an exciting team, especially with Juan Soto and Mr. Steroid himself. Fernando Tatis Jr. I didn't know I was doing steroid. Whatever. It's going to be interesting to watch them play. Like, I want to see more of these teams that the Blue Jays are playing against. Yeah, of course, there's a rivalry between the Yankees, the Red Sox, and those Rays. But it's going to be fun when the Blue Jays are playing these teams that they normally haven't been playing that much over the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years. You're going to see just a lot more of that. And how many people have been just screaming for a more balanced schedule in baseball? That's one of the things we've been talking about for what? I don't know, Roger.
Decades.
30, 40 years?
Decades.
I don't know. How long has it been?
Decades. It's the same thing as the designated hitter in the National League. How long did that go before they finally made the decision? Baseball just moves so slowly, George. Yeah, it's about time. Now you see it. It makes absolutely perfect sense. I think from a fan's perspective, they're really going to like it. Because one thing with Blue Jays Nation or Blue Jays community, whatever you want to call the fan base in Toronto, they travel really well already. But now here's a case. So you're going to get your schedule out. Schedule comes out. And by the way, that's one of the best things about baseball, which is another thing why they do a great job with groups. And people wonder, geez, you know, when you think about all of the games, 81 home games, how do you put the schedule out a year in advance? Because the schedule for next year is already out. So if you're the road trippy guy, you go with your buddies. Hey, we're going to play at Dodger Stadium next year. There's a trip. We're going to go to L.A., guys. Let's go. And then, of course, the next year, the Dodgers come here. So every 2 years, you know you're going to go to every park. In a two-year period, the Blue Jays will play in every major league ballpark. And you know exactly when, and you'll know a year in advance. Sure. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I guess you have to do it in baseball. It's one of those things, and I just think it changes the dynamic of Major League Baseball even more. And we'll see. Got some text to get to here. Graham in Toronto, and thank you all for texting. 590-590, text us anytime. Good morning to Graham in Toronto. He says, we could be the 27 Yankees, and we'd still lose in Tampa. George just read the record, Graham.
Very good.
You're pretty good. I'm liking that. Matt in Kitchener says, I'll take the Rays as the most hated because I'd rather have them overtake the division and have a falling Yankee squad in a wild card spot. Watch the Jays overtake the Yankees in the wild card. Wouldn't that be interesting, George, to even think? Because that's one thing we never envisioned, right? We never envisioned is the Yankees in the wild card game. Serious.
Yeah.
That was never a fact. That was a foregone conclusion. The Dodgers are going to win the division. And even the Mets to a point, I guess, in the National League, same kind of thing. Never even entered the conversation. Now that it's there, man, I'm telling you, it'd be interesting. Blaney and Markham says, I'm praying for three consecutive 17 to 18 inning wars between the Rays and the Yanks. Ha ha. Yeah, you know what? Let them beat each other up. You're right about that. Because then here's the beauty of this, George. So the Rays and the Yanks, here's what, if you're a Jays fan, what you want this weekend. Rain, long delays, long games, long games,
yep.
And then Tampa comes in to Toronto for a five-game series in 4 days, starting Monday, 12th to the 16th of September. Five games with the Rays in Toronto in 4 days. Rays have a couple of unvaccinated players as well, so that even if it's only, I think it's only two, but whatever, they're going to be a little bit shorthanded, beat up by the Yankees in the weekend series, while the Jays, from their perspective, hopefully are cleaning the Texas Rangers a little easier. table is nicely set here for the Blue Jays to get back into this race. So, yes, if you're – you got to cheer for the Rays, I think, in New York to win, tighten that race even more, and then you get the Rays. And then later in the month, you get the Yankees. So we can talk about Seattle's easy schedule and everything else. George, what you want is to play the teams you've got to beat either directly in front of you or directly behind you. And we saw it with Baltimore. Look how fast things turn around when you win 3 out of 4 against the team that's behind you. Now all of a sudden it's a 4.5-game lead. What have we been saying all summer? Is there going to be any separation? Well, that's a bit of a separation now. Now you got some house money there. Now you're 4.5 games back. And, hey, the Orioles are going to have to – I don't say they have to sweep the Jays, the 6 games, but Baltimore's got to win 4 out of 6 at least to even have a chance of catching the Blue Jays. So you beat your division opponents. You're in pretty good stead. Another texter, no name, says the Yankees played a majority of their first games against the Orioles early when the O's sucked. That's why they looked so good and got so far ahead. That's a fair point. That schedule was the Baltimore Orioles were a very different team, George. Back in April and May than they are today, which is another amazing element of their season. And finally, Jamie in Peterborough says, hi, Roger. Hi, George. Love listening to you guys. Thank you, sir. I am true to the Bills Mafia all the way. Yes, I know it's only been one game, but the team they beat are the defending champions. And to beat them in game one, I am hype and excited for the season. Go Bills, go. Jamie, thank you. The hype's not going to end off now, George. It's only going to get higher for the Bills. And I think the hype of the Jays is big time. So Texas Rangers, and I hesitate to say this, pretty crappy baseball team, 18 games under 500. Are the Jays going to play down to them like we saw earlier and against the Angels and the Cubs?
You hope not, but I think the positive is it's on the road, right? Blue Jays have been a juggernaut on the road here lately. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it, Roger, but it just seems like they're just playing phenomenal games on the road. I think it's a good sign that they're away from Rogers Center. I can't explain their recent struggles at home. Can you?
No, I can't. It's mind-boggling. It really is. When you consider, too, the Rogers Center is a very difficult environment for visiting teams to play in. It's not an easy ballpark. If Tampa Bay was losing games at home, you'd say, well, there's 11,000 people in the stands if you're lucky. It's a morgue in there. No, that's not the case at Rogers Center. Attendance is terrific. Jay's average attendance about 33,000. When you consider the general economy right now, when you consider most of the summer the team has been a disappointment compared to the expectations of the season, that's excellent attendance. And it's only going to be bigger in September. The weekend games in September are going to be crazy, especially if this team can get a little closer to first place. So. It is, yeah. Well, why can't they win at home? Nobody knows the answer to that.
Yeah, nobody does. Rick and Markham want to answer. He shot us a text at 590-590. Thanks, Rick. So, George, why don't you guys give us the stats for the Blue Jays versus the Rays at Rogers Center over the last few years? Who's won the battle for that? Over the last 15 years, Roger, the Rays are 71-60 against the Blue Jays in Toronto.
11 over in Toronto and 40 over in Tampa. 45 over in Tampa. Wow. 56 games over 500 against the Jays over 15 years. That's a especially when you consider, George, baseball is all about, you know, winning 2 out of 3. You know, you win 60% of your games in baseball, you're a powerhouse. You only win 40% of your games, you stink. So the line is not as, you know, harsh as it is in other sports. That is that's an eye-opening stat.
Yeah. And, wow. Okay, so let's even shrink it a little bit because the Blue Jays have been pretty good the last 5 years. Well, not really the last 5 years. 22-15 against the Jays in Toronto over the last 5 years.
Wow, and that's even with Vladdy and Bo and this improved team and everything else. Wow, that is some kind of a
thorn in the side of the Blue Jays.
You are a stats animal. There's no doubt about that. No,
I'm just hammering them out here, Roger.
You deserve credit, George.
Oh, thank you. I try to add a little bit to the show. We got a couple minutes here, Roger, before we get to the break, and we'll get to Charles Davis. And really looking forward to talking some more football with Charles Davis, because that first block we did and we talked football for like 25 minutes felt like 5 minutes to me because there's so much fun to talk about. But you mentioned earlier the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, and saw this on Twitter last night, Roger, and We talked about what an incredible person Queen Elizabeth was. This story from Richard Griffin, he was a former royal protection officer for the royal family and had this story a couple years back. And Sky News posted this on Twitter, saw last night, watched the video. It talks about how him and the Queen ran into an American couple during a picnic at Balmoral in Scotland. It's about a minute and a half, and I know we'll get to Charles Davis straight ahead, but just kind of wanted to play the audio because I think it's very appropriate this morning. What do you think?
Well said. Let's listen into that right now.
And normally on these picnic sites, you meet nobody. But there was two hikers coming towards us, and the Queen would always stop and say hello. And it was two Americans on a walking holiday. And it was clear from the moment that we first stopped, they hadn't recognised the Queen, which is fine. And the American gentleman was telling the Queen where he came from, where they were going to next, and where they'd been to in Britain. And I could see it coming, and sure enough, he said to Her Majesty, "And where do you live?" And she said, "Well, I live in London, but I've got a holiday home just the other side of the hills." And he said, "Well, how often have you been coming up here?" "Oh," she said, "I've been coming up here ever since I was a little girl, so over 80 years. And you could see the clogs thinking. He said, "Well, if you've been coming up here for 80 years, you must have met the Queen."
I love it.
And as quick as a flash, says, "Well, I haven't. The Dick here meets her regularly." So the guy said to me, "Well, you've met the Queen. What's she like?" And because I was with her a long time and I knew I could pull a leg, I said, "Oh, she can be very cantankerous at times, but she's got a lovely sense of humour." Anyway, the next thing I knew, this guy comes around, puts his arm around my shoulder, and before I could see what was happening, he gets his camera, gives it to the Queen, and says, "Can you take a picture of the two of us?" Anyway, we swapped places, and I took a picture of them with the Queen, and we never let on, and we waved goodbye. And then Her Majesty said to me, "I'd love to be a fly on the wall when he shows those photographs to the friends in America, and hopefully someone tells him who I am."